Blog Talk Radio.
Live from the Bronx, New York. Welcome to the Brovian Talks. For news, information, videos, and stuff, follow us on Twitter at Brovian93. At Brovian93, that is BROVIA93 on Twitter. BROVIA93 on Twitter. So, folks, in case you missed it, we had a good Sunday of hockey. Both games of significant importance in the NWHL. And for Sunday, we were wondering who will be the third seed and can the Boston Pride go undefeated. And the key and the important players in both games came down to the people in goal. The goaltenders were the key and their reason why the Riveters handed the Pride their first defeat of the season, and why Buffalo and then Connecticut are the third seed going to Newark as the Whales will head to Boston. We'll head to the Butte and Whale game first, and I have to tell you, this game really felt like a playoff game. We told you on Sunday that neither team wanted to play Boston in the first round. And boy, this game did not do the point. It was fast-paced, intense, a lot of penalties. And I mean, if you love good hardcore hockey, this game was for you. Both teams had 5 penalties each. There was plenty of goal scoring and a lot of good saves. But for me, I think, you know, it would be hard to say. Without a doubt, it came down to the goaltender for Buffalo. I mean, in the beginning of the second period, when Connecticut was pressing, and they were pressing hard, they had shot after shot after shot after shot. That goaltender saved everything. And the turning point in that game was right before Buffalo got the second goal. The amazingly, beautifully done diving save, which I think was the best save of the game, probably the best save I've seen a woman goalie make this entire season. And 99% of the time, a shot technically at an open net is a goal. In this case, a beautiful diving save, and about a minute later, the Buttes get a goal and take a lead 2-1. And then about 2 minutes later, they get another goal and a 3-1 lead. It was goaltending that won the game for Butte. Now, the Whales, we said, had to score early and had to defend the lead. They scored early. They scored 20 seconds in the game, but they couldn't hold it, and they didn't score early and often enough. Now, given credit, they came back and tied the game. But it really was too little too late. Momentum shifted back and forth. And at the end of the day, Buffalo got the last bit of momentum, and that led to the game-winning goal. And now we have the Whale going to Boston. And believe me, if they didn't want to play Boston before, you don't want to play the Pride now. Because the Pride has to be so motivated and so livid about what happened to them an hour later that, boy, if they don't destroy the Whale in this game, I'll be amazed. And again, the difference in this game was the people in goal. The Riveters their goaltender, Katie Fitzgerald, who I heard her name about a million times during the broadcast. I mean, what a performance. 44 saves. 44. And she shined the most in the end of the first period when Boston was on a two-minute power play. The entire 2 minutes, the Pride were in the Riveters zone. And the Riveters, you saw them, they were tired. And Fitzpatrick had at least three good shots on goal, and she saved all of them. That 2 minute at the end of the first was the difference in the game. If the Pride score, I think the Pride won that game. Now the Riveters had a 2-0 lead. Pride came back, tied it up before Madison Tacker, the Riveters, scored the game-winning goal with about 5 minutes to go. And I think if you want to beat the Pride, if you're a whale, you have to stop them at the power play. Because that power play started at the end of the first, when they were unleashing hell and fury in the Riveters zone. I mean, they were in the Riveters zone for the entire 2 minutes. The puck never left the blue line for two straight minutes, nonstop. It was beautiful. I couldn't believe it. I was like, I was thinking at the time, how did they not score? I mean, I'm looking at it now. In the first period, they outshot the Riveters 14-5. That's remarkable. Can you imagine if one shot went in? Forget about it. And it just goes to show you, just like in the NHL, in the WNHL, the most important piece on your team is people on goal. Both games showed that it's no different than the men's or women's game. If you have a good goaltender, you have a chance to win. And now, the Pride, if you're in a Boston Pride, or if you're one of their fans, the light at the end of this tunnel is you finally lost the game. That the pressure for having a perfect season is off. It's not going to happen. The undefeated streak is gone. That's one less thing to worry about. So if there's any good thing to take away from this game, or any positive to take out of this game, is that number one, they dominated the game. The Pride completely dominated the game. Two, the pressure's off. They no longer have to worry about an undefeated season. That's gone. I'm not sure if they were in to begin with, but now it's gone. It's a moot point. And three, I know that if I was a hockey player, talented enough to even be in any league in general, that I would be extremely motivated now to kick some butt. If you thought the product was scary before, you got to feel it now. And we'll talk more about this tomorrow as we get ready for the playoffs. But if you want to beat the Pride, you have to score on a power play. The Whale on Sunday went 0-5. And I think out of those five, only one was a full team of power play because every time they got a penalty, it seemed like they would give Buffalo 1-2 in the power play, which is ridiculous. Couldn't believe it. The Riveters got two power plays and they scored a goal on one of them. They were 1-2. The Pride were 1-4. If you want to beat Boston, you have to score every time you get the chance. Because they're too good, they're too strong, and they're too talented. When they're down, when at a disadvantage, you have to take advantage. You have to. But wow, both games are classics. Both games are great. If you were expecting cold games, if you want to watch good hockey, both games were spectacular. They did a good job by the league yesterday. A very good job. And as the season ends, playoffs. Now, if you're an underdog team in the playoff format, it's not nearly as bad as it would be in a series, because this is a one-game playoff. There's one semifinal game and one final game. You have to win two games to become champion. Now, believe me, it's easier said than done. At least if you're the whale, you don't have to worry about being Boston four times. You beat them once and you go on. And you know what? If you want to be the best, you have to beat the best. And right now, the Pride are the best by far. So in the final season, or the end of the regular season, the final standings are as followed. First place, of course, or the Boston Pride, 16-1, 32 points. Second place, hosting the other playoff game, will be the Riveters, 8-7-3, 19 points. Third place, the Buttes, Buffalo Buttes, 6-10-1, 13 points. Fourth place, the Connecticut Whale, 5-12-1, 11 points. But if you think these standings don't show how dominant the Pride are. I mean, we pointed this out when we talked about the NHL, how goal differential is key to success. If you have a good, positive goal differential, it proves that A, you can score, and B, you're put on the team. It shows you how good you are, how good your defense is, how good your offense is. And in this league, and the women's league is the exact same thing. Same thing. The Boston Pride's goal differential is 44. It's plus 44. Plus 44. The second best goal differential in this league are the Riveters. They're negative 3. That tells you all you need to know about how good the Pride are and how they are so heavily the favorites to win this cup. It's unbelievable. Now, I think they're going to win the. I think they'll defend the championship. They won last year. They'll win this year. It's a bit hard because it's only one game. But they're so good. They're so talented that I think anything but a championship will be a bit of a disappointment. I mean, they scored the most goals in the league. They've given up the fewest goals in the league. And the goal differential blows everyone else out of the water. It's crazy. So we'll do more on the women's hockey tomorrow at the playoff begin. Again, the playoff format is a one-game playoff. Tomorrow is the Whale and the Pride. And on Friday is the Buttes and Riveters. We'll do both games tomorrow. On Saturday, we'll talk about both playoff games. And we'll preview the final on Sunday's morning show. So that's the Women's Hockey League. Then we'll be done with that. And then we talk about more about the NHL. We'll talk about more about politics. But right now, this is the nitty-gritty time. The focus on what's important now. So that's it for the Women's Hockey today. We'll do more tomorrow, Saturday and Sunday, and Monday as well to finish off the season. But shifting to the political world for a second, I mean, last night, I was watching SmackDown Live. Number one, SmackDown is so good right now. It's amazing, because I haven't seen SmackDown in years. And I watched it last night because I had no school. And I was floored by it, amazed. But out of SmackDown, I go on Facebook, like I usually do, and just see what people are talking about. And over and over and over again, I see this Rachel Maddow thing about Trump's taxes, that she has Trump's 2005 tax returns or two pages of it or whatever have you. And I'm thinking, oh my God, what a great scoop. Jeez Louise. Talk about making mountains out of molehills. It was the most overrated thing since God knows what. It showed nothing. It proved nothing. I mean, Rachel Maddow in that hour reminded me of Glenn Beck back when Obama was president. We talked about this on Trump's Inauguration Day, how it's funny when the shoe's on the other foot, how all the roles reverse. The left-wing media becomes a conspiracy theorist, or the right-wing media becomes, you know, the defender of truth, or whatever you want to call it, or the defender of the incumbent. I mean, it's completely mind-boggling and completely eye-opening, too. In fact, if anything, I was shocked about how much Trump paid in taxes, because I was under the assumption he paid nothing. I only paid about 1% of his income in taxes. He paid 24%. But if anything, Trump looks good for the first time in a week. He looks good for once. It's unbelievable. Why did he pay $38 million in taxes? I'm like, wow. He paid a lot more than I thought. And boy, this does not look good for Maddow at all. And she's a smart person. You know, she's not an idiot. She's a very smart person. But boy, she looks foolish in this one. You would think that if the 8 years of Obama, the left wing would have learned. Not to speculate. Not to find gotcha moments. Because normal people don't care. No. Nobody, these tax returns are a Democrat's version of the Obama birth certificate. The same thing. They're chasing something that's not there, but nobody cares about. You know, they're calling Trump a fascist, just like the right wing has called Obama a Muslim or a terrorist or a socialist. I mean, it's no different. And I can imagine if you're a normal human being, how disgusted you might be. Because it's all a game to these people. I mean, these are people's lives. And the people on TV, the people in Washington, D.C., it's a game to them. It's a game. They don't care. And we've said it during the election season all of last year, and we'll say it again this year. It just shows you how much people are hypocrites. If you're in politics, you're definitely a hypocrite. There's no doubt about it. This once again enforces how hypocritical politics can be and how partisan and disgusting it looks. Because on those two pages, there was nothing of importance, nothing newsworthy at all. Nothing. In fact, it makes him look good for the first time in a week. It took away health care talk. It took away the Obama spying on Trump or whatever you want to call it. It took away from Trump's, you know, God knows what else he's done in the past week. Who the hell knows? But all the negative attention on Trump, it takes it away from him now. It takes it away. It's gone. For at least 1 or 2 days, it's gone. I mean, you talk about, you know, coughing something up. Boy. I mean, you're making mountains out of molehills. And when you do that, you're going to lose. That's not a way formula. I mean, I've seen it under Obama for 8 years, and it never worked. It's not going to work when you do it to Trump. It's not. The guy is too smart, he's too clever, and he's too likable. He is. I mean, that's one thing him and Obama have in common. They're both likable people. Now, 40% of Americans, no matter what they do, may hate them, but the majority of them like them. They're likable people. They are. Sorry, I don't care. It's the truth. They're likable people. And likable people, at the end of the day, no matter how much money you throw at them, always, always, always win. They always come up on top. Bill Clinton, George Bush, Barack Obama, Donald Trump. You can't get them with gotchas. You can't do it. You can't get them with speculation. You can't get them The only way to get these people is with facts and hardcore evidence. If you don't have that, then wait before you fire. I mean, I'm still surprised Trump paid them because I was shocked. I couldn't believe it. Like $38 million, what? I thought he paid nothing. He paid something. I'm amazed. I still can't believe he paid something. I'm shocked. Boy, talk about blowing an opportunity. Jeez. What a waste of an hour of my life I'll never get back. What we're going to do with politics. What the hell? At least the snowstorm yesterday wasn't that bad. You know, all over, at least in the New York market, because I live in New York City, it was all about, oh my God, we're going to get 2 feet of snow. You know, this is the worst storm since 1888 or something like that. And, you know, don't get me wrong, it was a pretty bad storm. It was nowhere nearly as bad as people said it was going to be. Nowhere nearly as bad. We got like, what, 10, in the rough, I think like 10 inches, something like that. It was annoying to shovel. I didn't want to do it. But, you know, when you live in a house, there's something you had to do whether you like them or not. And shoveling is one of them. And boy, was a lot of snow. I think it was about 2.5 hours shoveling snow. And my dad came home, he did a rest with my brother, so all together probably 4 hours of shoveling. And if you live in Boston or upstate New York, boy, God bless you people, because, geez, that was like at least three, you know, I think like in upstate, you got like 40 inches. That's like three some. That's like 3 feet or something. That's ridiculous. And also New York City, you know, under the de Blasio years, we've had more and more of homeless people on the streets. They call it a homeless problem. I guess if you want to call it that, or if you have nothing else to say, you know, if you don't have a better term, I guess it is a homeless problem. And I was reading on the New York Post last night that during the storm, a lot of homeless people went down in the subway system. And that a lot of people who took the subway yesterday were complaining about all the homeless people there, smells, it's disgusting, and whatever have you. Now, you know, I understand the complaints. I do, you know. I take the New York City's transit system, and even when there are no homeless people there, it's still, you know, not in tip-top shape. And the trains are always late. But, you know, I understand what's complaining because almost, you know, because on the pictures I saw on the article, they were just lying down there on the train. You know, I get it. You know, they're homeless, so they can't, you know, they don't have access to a daily shower like most people do. I get it. But, you know, I really don't mind it. That, you know, don't mind the homeless, especially in a storm like this, to be in subway system. Because a lot of these homeless shelters are not the greatest or safest place to be. I mean, early in the summer, a lot of the local news here were interviewing some homeless people off the street, and they always say, these shelters are not safe. They're not that great. So until the city or the state improves these shelters and make it safe and convenient for the homeless folks, this probably will be a lasting problem. Now, I don't mind them being in a subway system. I really don't. Pause it because I was on a subway yesterday. But it's, you know, it was freezing cold yesterday. And I had a jacket on. So, I you know, the homeless, is the homeless folks want to go down in the subway system and spend a day down there, you know, in the warm with a cup of coffee or something? That's fine. It really is. Because number one, who in the hell is in the subway in a snowstorm? You know, I know that if I had a corn sick. But I don't know. No, it doesn't bother me. I get it. The city and the state has to do something to provide these people shelter and a safe place to go. You know, and unfortunately for them, the subway is the best way to go. So I really, you know, this really falls not on the homeless people because it's not their fault. It really isn't. I mean, you know, it's not your fault. I put the responsibility mainly on the city, on the mayor, and on the state, on the governor, and on whoever else is in charge of this thing. Because, you know, we're a first world nation. New York is one of the most tech places in the country. And you can't, you know, tell me that you have a nice, safe place for the homeless people to flock to. It's ridiculous. Maybe the mayor stops going on these speaking tours and stops being an advocate against Trump after he worked for once in the past 4 years, you know, and maybe the homelessness on the street will decrease, you know, maybe because some put some funding into the shelters, you know, try to help the super. Because these people, they do need help. They do need a safe place to go. And then words like this, they need a warm place to go. And these shelters that currently, as they are not the best place in the world. And it isn't just a blogger's problem. I mean, this has been going on for many, many years. And, you know, we'll talk more about local politics on Friday. I mean, this has been a problem for 4 years now, and nothing has been done. Nothing has improved. In fact, it's gotten even worse, probably, just, you know, as the years have gone along. And listen, we all know the blogs are going to be reelected. It's a moot point talking about the election because he's going to be reelected in a landslide. So it's still his problem for 4 more years. You know, I'm going to go to jail on that corruption probe. He's going to be around for 4 years, whether you like it or not. And his main issue to me right now is that the police, not Trump, not immigration. His number one problem and his number one job should be providing better shelters for homeless people to make our streets cleaner, our subway cleaner, and to get them back on their feet. And right now, this mayor, he has not done his job. And it results in things like this happening.